At least remember the REM song that we are singing this month that was composed and, you know, written in 1987. We'll also remember the Nora Ephron classic from 1989. As I wrote the sermon, I thought, man, this series is really showing my age, when I grew up, and maybe the demographic that I'm speaking to particularly. I don't know. Some of these illustrations work for you. Others, maybe you'll go home and watch the film. But in the film, there's this really great scene. And those of you that know the movie, it's not the scene you're probably thinking of. But there's this secondary great scene when Billy Crystal's character, Harry, is talking about his dark side with Sally, who's played by Meg Ryan. And Harry says, "When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends. That, my friend, is a dark side." It can be really tempting to jump to the end, to read the last page, to just get a glimpse of what is ahead of us. Now, I've never done what his character does and actually read the end of the book. But sometimes, I'll admit, if I'm in the middle of an intense chapter and I know I don't have time at that moment to finish the section, I'll find myself wanting to just, you know, flip forward a few pages. Sometimes I give in to that temptation and read the end of the chapter, at least, just so that I can know that everything's going to be okay, at least for my character. I always tell myself I'll go back and read those pages later, and I usually do, but I just need that comfort, maybe of knowing before I go to bed or something that it's going to work out. And right now, you're probably wondering what the heck any of this has to do with Thessalonica. Well, they've been tempted a bit by their dark side to jump to the end. Only they're not so interested in going back and reading the pages they skipped, or more appropriately, living them. You see, the Thessalonians, like many early Christians, were waiting for Jesus' return, the parousia, as it's called, or the second coming. And everyone thought that he was going to be back really soon. In fact, in Paul's first letter to the church of Thessalonica, he implies that this will be the case. And so the people felt like Jesus' return could happen at any moment. Since they knew what the end of the story was, they didn't much feel like they needed to be very active or engaged in the present, in the now. Why bother working on becoming better Christians or more faithful followers or doing good works if Jesus was going to show up tomorrow anyways and all of this would be over? So the people began to withdraw from the world. They kind of became passive in their living. They figured they could just hang out on the sidelines and that there was no real reason to join the game. Why should they bother engaging in the rigors of daily life or faithful living if history was about to come to a close? And then things got more messy because fake news. That's right. Fake news back in Paul's time did not spread quite as quickly as it does in our time of social media and Twitter and such, but it was still a thing. And they did not have Snopes to confirm if it was real or fake news. Someone writing under Paul's name had informed the church of Thessalonica that Jesus had already come. Well, you can see the problem, right? The early Christians believed that upon his second coming, Jesus would judge the people and that those who were found worthy would be united to him. Well, if this news was true, then apparently the Thessalonians had not proven worthy enough. One commentator described this as apocalyptic frenzy. Had Jesus come or hadn't he? Was the end of the world, the apocalypse, here now or not? The people were agitated, they were scared, they were confused. They didn't know what to believe or how to live in this pre, maybe post-apocalyptic world. We've witnessed how fake news can rile folks up. People were anxious, withdrawn, lost. 2,000 years later, and people are still pretty fascinated by the apocalypse. There is always a list of folks predicting the date of the end of the world. And when that day passes, they go write a book about their miscalculation and offer up a new date to look forward to. So I was a teen when the Left Behind series came out. You remember those? Not books that are in our church library. But I can remember when they came out, and I had so many church friends that read them as if they were holy scriptures themselves. Most of them had probably never read the book of Revelation or any other apocalyptic text in the Bible, let alone done any work to interpret those passages. But there was no need to do so when Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins had told them exactly how it was all going to end one day in their fictional bestseller. I had a church friend who said that she would always keep her towel really close to the shower because she was afraid that the rapture might happen when she was naked. And perhaps she would just have a moment to grab her towel real quick. We were young. Of course, as progressive Christians, we're all a little skeptical about all that. We generally just kind of stay away from those apocalyptic texts, and we give a smirk that says, "Really, you think so?" when folks start talking about such things. Instead, we feed our fascination with dystopian futures through film and books that are not connected to the Bible. You see, we still have this fascination. In the last 10 years, young adult fiction has had a field day with this societal fascination through series like The Hunger Games and Divergent and The Maze Runner. They're all on our bookshelf at Hope. For over 2,000 years, whether through the lens of the Bible or our imaginations, we've been attracted to the end of the story, to what's going to happen on the last page of the world's existence. In the Church of Thessalonica, today, or any of the years in between, one of the things that we all share is just that we are in the between. We are living in the meantime, in the middle. And the middle is not a sprint. It's a marathon, a ridiculously long marathon. And usually we would just like to see where the finish line is. I do not run marathons for that very reason. So here we are in this marathon, sometimes feeling like it's the end of the world as we know it, that we are racing toward destruction. And it'd be easy to get caught in the frenzy of it all, as some of the Thessalonians did. A frenzy riddled with anxiety and agitation and despair. Or we could withdraw, as some of the other Thessalonians did. They withdrew because they figured if Jesus was coming tomorrow, why bother? We might withdraw for other reasons, thinking that our small efforts to curb global warming or to stop injustice or to end poverty are futile. Those are all possible responses when we feel like we already know where the story is going to end. Thankfully, though, Paul doesn't leave them in such a state, nor with such an ending. Paul gets rather apocalyptic in the middle of this chapter, and a lot of folks have tried to decipher what he is saying, looking for signs that folks do with other biblical texts, trying to read current world news into them. We're not going to do that today. But the thing that remains constant in the Bible's teaching about the end of the story is that God will have the last word, and it is a word of hope and life. It's an ending of earth and heaven being one, and of creation being good and new just as God created it. And that is still a good word for us today when we feel like it's the end of the world as we know it. In the meantime, then and now, our calling is to be co-creators of this kingdom existence with God. While the narrative of creation is much larger than our individual stories, we are still a part of the story, living as disciples and helping bring about the kingdom, the joining of heaven and earth. As so many of us have said before, on earth as it is in heaven. In addition to calming the Thessalonians in his letter, this is the message he leaves with them. stand firm and hold fast to the traditions you were taught by us. Don't withdraw. Don't despair. Don't just sit back on the sidelines, Paul says. Stand firm and hold fast to the traditions. Paul tells the Thessalonians to focus upon the present, to live with faith in the here and now. Elizabeth Barrington Forney writes, "We are not called to run in fear that the sky is falling. We are called to be the sons and daughters of Christ." We are called to live as disciples in the middle, to actively engage with the world, to seek justice, to do good, to show compassion, to extend peace, to seek to know our God, and to love all. We are called to live in the middle, not withdraw, not panic, not give up, but to keep living day after day as disciples, seeking to be the hands and feet of the one who, even on the day of his dying breath, was still loving and forgiving those around him, those beside him, and those who put him on that cross. Living in the middle is an invitation to build the kingdom here as we live and act as Jesus to one another. There is a story that is told of a day back in the early times of Puritan New England when there was a great eclipse. And the moon had crossed paths with the sun, and the day had become dark, and the people were frightened. "The world is going to end. What shall we do?" someone asked. And a wise and insightful neighbor said, "Let us be found doing our duty." Yesterday and today, it may feel as though the world as we knew it is ending. And it may very well feel that way tomorrow, and some days off in the future as well. But the end of the story, the last page, is one that is filled with radical hope and life. And we have to ask ourselves, how will we live in the meantime? We have to ask, how will we choose to live in the middle? May we continue to stand firm in what we believe in, in the hope and love that is our God. May we hold to what we have been taught, to how we have been taught to live as disciples, with love for all our neighbors, showing compassion, seeking goodness and justice, showing mercy and grace, extending peace. Because when we live in this way, we are building the kingdom, even right now, in the middle. May we walk this life together, the life of discipleship, here in the middle. Paul calls upon God at the end of this passage to comfort the people of Thessalonica. He asks God to comfort their hearts and to strengthen them and all that they do and all that they say. As you came into worship this morning, as I mentioned, you got a rock. And if you didn't get one, there are some in the back that you can pick up as you participate in this action. We're living in a time in which there is a lot around us that can create despair and fear in our hearts and our spirits. But there is also a lot that can give us hope. There is a lot that can strengthen us. When we look out around us, here in this space and beyond these walls, into the circles we inhabit, and beyond our own circles, we discover those sources of hope, those glimmers of light, those moments and those people that reflect Jesus' light in the world. And they are like a bright rock, strengthening us, building up our foundation. So as we sing our final song, I invite you to take your rock and to place it in the rock box at the back of worship, and then to return to your seat. You can get up and go at your leisure. We're not going to usher you there. Go at your own pace. Go as we sing. Take your rock, this rock that represents the light and hope of Jesus in your life, and place it among the others so that we can see the strength of them when they are placed together, when we actively live as disciples in the middle, when we walk it together. And in the days beyond today, when you see those brightly colored rocks together, may they offer our hearts comfort. May they restore our hope, and may they strengthen us to live here in the middle, to live boldly into our calling as the hands and feet of Jesus. Amen.
Kind of our next to the last song, but you can stand anyway if you'd like. It might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you. And I know you might have a heavy load, but I can carry some too. I'll lift you up when they push you down. I will raise my voice and stand my ground. Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you.
Well, it looks like it might be a long night,
'cause I ain't going nowhere.
And I know it's gonna be a hard fight,
but I will stay right here.
I'll shine a light in the darkest hour. I will face the man in the tallest tower. Well, it looks like it might be a long night,
but I ain't going nowhere.
Strive in the name of love.
I will speak.
I will speak. I will shout.
I will shout.
I will sing into the skies above.
Well, it looks like it might be a perilous climb,
but I will follow your lead.
And I know it might be a long time
until the last one of us is free. But I will hold on tight, stay by your side. I will be with you for this whole damn ride.
It looks like it might be a perilous climb,
but I will follow your lead.
All skate, everybody sing.
Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you. And I know you might have a heavy load, but I can carry some too. I'll lift you up when they push you down. I will raise my voice and stand my ground. Well, it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you. Well, I'm gonna walk it with you. Well, I'm gonna walking with you. I will walk, I will climb, shine my light the whole. because it looks like it might be a hard road, but I'm gonna walk it with you. Well, I'm gonna walk it with you. I'm gonna walk it with you. I'm gonna walk it with you.
I'm glad to walk it with all of you. Couple quick things. Look in your bulletin. There's lots of stuff coming up. I'm not going to give you details on everything, but next Saturday night is Fires of Fellowship, and it's hosted by Christina and Shanna this month. This is formerly Theology on Tap. We are in their home, so come on out and see their new place. And then on the 18th, a Monday night, is a dinner with Covenant Presbyterian. This our picnic that we used to do in the fall, we are moving it to the spring and having an indoor meal in the fall because of, you know, the weather. So it's going to be a Thanksgiving meal to give thanks for our partnership, our friendship that we've been building these last 3 years. We will be at Covenant Presbyterian, and it is a potluck meal. So it's like everything imaginable you would want at a Thanksgiving dinner. It doesn't have to be.
Except that Jell-O with the carrots in the bottom.
I'm bringing it.
Not fooling anybody.
If that's what you want, you can bring it. Just know that Greg won't eat it. So look at the details in your bulletin for those events. Chili cook-off is downstairs. Please come down and enjoy chili and bid on the best chili winners. We always award the top three, and all of the proceeds from that go to Colorado Camp this coming summer. Also, if you have not paid your room deposit, you need to see Sarah today and do that. And on your way out, stop by the tree in the back and take an envelope, if you will, to fill and help build up our reserve fund. We're thankful for your generosity, and we want to continue to keep building that fund for our church for those rainy days, right, when we need it. I have one last announcement, and then we're going to have a benediction, spoken benediction. We got it. Terry was really excited last week. We're going to go this week, though, and then we're going to sing. We have hired a new youth pastor. His name is Reverend Aaron Huffman. He comes to us with 9 years of youth experience, 7 working in a church, and then currently who works for Hillcrest Ministries full-time and will be with us with our students on Sundays. He lives in Kearney, so believe it or not, someone is going to commute farther than me, maybe the same as Katie. His wife is also a youth pastor. She was recently ordained and serves at a church up there. And they have 2 children, a 13-month-old, a little boy, and their daughter, I believe, is 6. And so we are thrilled to have Aaron come on staff. He has just got a heart for working with students, and we're excited to have him with us. He will be here 2 weeks from today on the 24th. He will come to worship. There will be a special meet and greet time with the students and their families up in the youth room, and then he will be in worship, and he will stay for Hanging of the Green so you can get to know him. And then he will officially be on staff December 1st with us. So I look forward for you to have the opportunity to meet him and get to know him and his family as well when they're able to be with us. Hello. Oh. Don't breathe. Oh, they breathe on me.
Right on.
So Eleanor's going to help me with our benediction today. Our benediction are the final words that Paul offers the church of Thessalonica, and then we will sing our sung benediction together. Now may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God our Father and Mother, Paul didn't write mother, who loved us and through grace gave us eternal comfort and good hope, comfort your hearts and strengthen them in every good work and word. May it be so. Why don't we all stand and sing our closing song?
Lost the stick. Wait for it. We lost the stick.